Hosting again on such short notice of returning right off the plane and Baruch Hashem toward your house immediately afterwards is very special. Thanks again to Kevin for sponsoring the refreshments, and I guess we'll dedicate this year also. Lili Nishmas, your grandfather, right? Which is again, one more time, Nachman Yehoshua Ben Avraham Levi. Okay. Michelle should have an Aliyah. Is this on? Okay, tonight's topic is abortion. Abortion is a very, very, as I'm sure you all know, a very, very complex topic. This issue is one of the, I guess, one of the older issues debated in medical ethics discussions, including in the halachic Torah perspective on these kinds of things. The last couple of weeks when we talked about insemination, IVF, and donors, and surrogate mothers, and those things, those are a little bit newer in terms of some of the halachic discussion. Abortion has been around for a long time already, in terms of the sources and in terms of the contemporary applications. So again, major, major topic, a lot of discussion, a lot of articles, a lot of sources. We're just going to basically go through a relatively brief survey of some of the different sources that are discussed in the debate, and some of the opinions of contemporary poskim. As I'm sure we don't actually have to state, it's very obvious, but just to state it again at the beginning, every single case of abortion absolutely, absolutely must go through a very, very respected and competent posik. And even competent poskim often will pass up the case to one of the greater gedolim, because the issue is very, very sensitive, obviously, very, very serious, and the stakes are great when we're talking about a possible life in the situation. And again, you know, because of the opinions and the sources are not clear, therefore it becomes very, very delicate, and every case has to be dealt with definitely on a case-by-case basis. You can't make any general rules, though we'll see some of the poskim as... You know, on the more stringent side, do make rules, but in general, you know, every case is a little bit different and has to be worked out. But again, some of the general guidelines and some of the different opinions we can definitely go through now. Okay. Of course, we know also that abortion is an issue which is not only discussed in the Jewish religion; it's discussed in a lot of different religions. And I mentioned before the Catholic Church. I guess the question will be here: is the Jewish religion more lenient than the Catholic Church and other positions when it comes to the issue of abortion? And the real issue, I guess, that everything comes down here in terms of abortion is: what is the Jewish position? What does the Torah believe about the beginning of life? When does life actually begin? Does life begin at the state of conception? Does life begin when the fetus is formed, meaning a little bit later when the actual body is formed the way that we have, with hands and feet and eyes, etc., which is a little bit later? At the time of birth, after 30 days, when we call the Vlad Bar Kayama, after 30 days, before that there are certain questions that maybe he's not going to survive. Certainly in the times of Chazal that was the case. How do we view this? And based on that, how will we take those concepts and apply them to answer the question of abortion? Is it ever permitted to abort a fetus? And if so, when would it be permitted and why? I mean, just to give you an interesting starting point here, this is not, we're not going to come back to this later, but actually maybe we'll mention it in passing, but just very, very interesting in that light about discussing when is the beginning of life. There's a very, very interesting discussion in the Rosh in Maseches Yoma. It's actually the first source on the sheet here. I guess I'm going to not read the sources inside tonight just because some of them I'll read inside, but some of them I'm going to skip just because a lot of you, we don't have source sheets, so I'll just say them outside. This is the Rosh in Maseches Yoma in Parakhes, a very famous Rosh. So he has a discussion here, a debate between the Bahag and the Ramban. And the question basically, there's two points here, but part of the question has to do with Yom Kippur and Sakana, and also in terms of Chil Shabbos comes into this as well. The question is, if the woman is expecting, okay, she's, let's say, she's, for example, five months pregnant, and there's a question of Sakana, there's a question of danger to the baby, to the fetus. Okay, now again, in those times, this was a question whether you really could actually identify a danger to the fetus, which was not a danger to the mother. Meaning any danger to the mother, certainly everybody agrees on Yom Kippur, she has to eat. On Shabbos, she's allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, she has to be Mechal Shabbos. Now the question is, if one could have identified danger to the fetus and not to the mother, would you be allowed to be Mechal Shabbos or to eat on the fetus's behalf? That's the question. And it seems to be a bit of an interesting debate here. The Bahag, the Baal Hilchos Gedolos, wants to say that is permitted. Okay, he apparently feels that it's permitted to violate Shabbos or perhaps Yom Kippur for this type of situation. Apparently, he feels that this fetus is enough of a living type of being to permit you to be violating serious Isurei Doraisa, such as Shabbos and Yom Kippur, in order to keep the baby alive. Others, the Ramban basically disagrees. He just says, well, you know, how do you, you know, that's not necessarily the case. Basically, you know, he says every single time we would know that it's the woman. The woman is also in danger. Basically, again, if you're looking inside, it's the last two or three lines there. He says, I don't really understand what's going on here, because it should be anyway that the every single danger to the. So the fetus is also a danger to the mother. So again, they discuss the question. There may be, you know, a machlokus about this point, but what's interesting is that, again, they seem to be discussing the question of how far can you go in terms of treating a life as a life, in terms of whether that can permit you to violate other prohibitions. Okay, I mean, obviously, pikuach nefesh is docha everything, but the question is, when you have this quasi-status of a fetus, does that allow you to mechal Shabbos or to mechal Yom Kippur in order to save the life of the fetus? That's really the main question. And again, today we may have quite cases of this, and this debate may be very relevant when it comes to abortion. This source in the Rush is sometimes quoted on the side. It's not one of the main sources that's quoted in the abortion topic, but it is mentioned here and there. But again, it just sort of helps us jump into the topic and think about the focus us on the question of when we look at life and what are the other consequences of that. Okay, that's basically, yeah.
Are you allowed to be mechalel Shabbos or Yom Kippur to save a limb?
To save a limb. So that's an important question. Also, that's also a major discussion in the poskim. You can take a look in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Shin Chaf Ches and Or HaChaim, Hilchos Shabbos, to discuss that question. At the end of the bottom line today, generally we're very makil about all these things. Number one, we're makil in today's situation where you know that there is a danger to the fetus. We're makil. Halachot Ma'aseh, we're makil on that. Even again, today usually it's also assumed to be a danger to the mother, but again, there may be certain cases where maybe it's not. But in terms of the limb also, usually what's assumed today, and this is not our topic now, though maybe in the next couple of weeks we will probably have at least two shiurim on questions of medical halacha on Shabbos. We definitely, medical situations on Shabbos, we definitely will discuss that. It's generally assumed today that any danger, you can confirm this, any danger to one limb is a danger to the entire body. That's what's usually assumed today, and therefore we usually assume that you can be mechal Shabbos, whatever is necessary.
Yeah. If the answer is yes, then this wouldn't be the fact that you can be mechalel for the ubar doesn't prove that it's a living person. It could be the same thing as for a limb.
Could be. Well, you want to say if it's based on ubar yerachimo, meaning if the fetus is considered to be part of your body. So that's also a debate.
Saving part of the mother, even if it's not alive, and killing it would not be bad. Right. It would just be injuring.
But that whole question is based on the same, at least halacha lemaisa is based on the same assumption, is it dangerous for the mother? So again, today the assumption is usually that it probably is, but again, maybe, I don't know, we can think of certain situations where maybe it's not dangerous to the mother, and you know that it's dangerous to the baby, will be lost. But it's, you know, miscarriage or whatever, but the mother is not dangerous. Usually, though, we assume that, you know, these cases are pretty serious. It's not, it could be the same thing, but it doesn't have to be. If you could isolate a case where it was definitely not dangerous to the mother, and it might be different than the halacha lemaisa conclusion about the limb. But again, the limb also, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, it's not clear. It's a machlokas in the Rishonim what to do with this, with the case of a limb. Many posts know that you can't be mechal Shabbos doraisa to save a limb. Again, but that, we'll have to leave that for another time. Okay. So now, there is the story starts, I guess, basically, would say, already in the Torah. Right? How does the story start in the Torah? So we have psukim in the Torah that deal with a question, not exactly of abortion, but of miscarriage. If you're familiar with psukim in Parshas Mishpatim, so this is actually not on the sheet, but a very famous psukim in Parshas Mishpatim, where we have two people that are fighting, and basically, by accident, unintentionally, they knock over a pregnant woman, and she, her yatsu yaladeha, okay, her fetus has come out, unfortunately. She basically has a miscarriage. Okay, so now what happens? What's the halacha? So what does the Torah say in that case? All the Torah says is that the person that knocks her over, that caused the miscarriage, has an obligation to repay her for the loss of what we call the demei vladot, demei vladot, the sum of the however much the fetuses were worth, which again, we're not going to get into exactly how that's decided. Say again?
It doesn't have to run to a
correct,
cloth.
Right. Meaning all the regular consequences of killing somebody do not appear in the psukim. Okay? Meaning it doesn't say that he killed somebody. Okay? It doesn't say you're chayav misa, even if you did it with hasra, you know, with warnings, etc., etc. It just says that he's chayav to pay for demei vlados, for the monetary worth, however you decide that, which we're not going to go into now, of the fetuses. So that's very interesting. Again, it's unintentional in that situation, but if it was actually real murder, we would think that there would be some other discussion in the pasuk or in the post, in the Rishonim or Chazal on the pasuk, referring to this question of how, just how bad is it, what kind of murder is it. It's not mentioned. So the pashas, just the very, you know, off the cuff implication from here would seem to be that this is not a problem of Ritzicha per se. There may be other issues at play, but it doesn't seem to be a problem for Ritzicha. We'll see later, though, as we go on, that that's not necessarily the case. The next sources, again, there are a number of other sources we're going to be skipping for now, but the next major sources that are discussed in this context are a Mishnah in Ohalos and a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Very, very famous. I guess they were really made famous by this discussion of abortion, but they were pretty famous before as well, I think. The first Mishnah is in source number 2. This is the Mishnah in Ohalos. Basically, the case here is where you have a woman who is who's having difficulty giving birth, which actually would have been, you know, this past week's parsha with Rachel, who was giving birth to to Binyamin, and she says, "Vatehilei Rachel v'tekash b'lidata." She had difficulty in her birth, and eventually we know that she died from it. So the Mishnah Ohalos discusses a similar case where she's having difficulty giving birth, and apparently the fetus that's about to, the baby that's about to come out, is causing a danger to the mother. So the question is, can you get rid of the baby? Can you kill the baby in order to save the life of the mother? So the answer of the Mishnah is yes, absolutely. And the Mishnah is pretty graphic in its description. It says you can cut up the fetus in her stomach and take it out limb by limb. Because mibnei, this is the key part for us, mibnei shechayeha kodmin l'chaya, because her life, meaning the mother's life, takes precedence over his life, its life, meaning the baby's life. However, yatsa rubo, if the majority of the baby already came out during the birthing process, then halachas ein no ginbo, then we can't touch it, she'ein doche nefesh mibnei nefesh, because in that case you cannot push off one nefesh, one soul, whatever nefesh means, for another nefesh.
And already that came out, as far as that it's already three-quarters, it's in this world?
Yeah, so it seems like once it's already Rosh, it's already Yasa Rubo, and there's a question about Rosh also.
It could be three-quarters the other way. I mean, the head could still be inside.
Right, so that's the question. Right.
Rove is right. Out,
right.
It's in this.
Right, so some people say Rosho Virubo. Here, our text of the Mishnah says it's got to be Rubo, the majority. If you look at the Gemara, it says Yasa Rosho, and there's different versions of that. But at the end of the day, the main point for us is that once the baby is considered to be halachically out of the woman in this world, apparently we can't kill him anymore. Why? Because you can't push off one nefesh for another nefesh. Meaning at that point, he apparently is on equal, the baby's on equal footing with the mother. You cannot kill the baby to save the mother. Okay, that's the ruling of the Mishnah. So now, from this Mishnah, before you even look at the Gemara, the question is, what can you learn from this Mishnah about the halachic definition of life and about our situation of abortion?
There's a difference between being out and being in the fetus.
Right, so that's for sure true. Meaning it sounds like once the fetus is out, from the Mishnah, it sounds like once the fetus is out, it's halachically considered to be an absolute life, and it takes the mother takes no does not take precedence over the baby. Both of them are considered to be totally, totally alive. The question for us, though, in terms of abortion, is what is the status of the fetus before it comes out? Meaning in that case, it says we're allowed, if she's having difficulty, and apparently it's dangerous for her, they're allowed to kill the fetus in order to save her life. So the question is, in this case, what is the status of that fetus? So if you look carefully, it says, this is the problem, it says, it says her life precedes, takes precedence over his life, its life, okay, implying, does the fetus have some sort of life? Seems chayav, that it does have some sort of life. At the same time, in the second part, it says that once the fetus is out, then you don't kill the fetus, because ein doche nefesh mipnei nefesh, you can't push off one nefesh for another nefesh, implying that before the baby was born, did the baby have a nefesh? Apparently not. So that's part of the difficulty here. There's a bit of a contradiction here between the two parts of the Mishnah. What is the status of this fetus, right? Does this fetus have life or does it not have life? If it's somewhere in the middle, what exactly, how do we define that medium status?
It's a davar shelo ba'olam.
So that's true. That's true, but at the same time, it does seem to be that it's not nothing. It's some status, right?
If you can't write a contract, if you know it's a female,
mm-hmm.
Like this, you can't write a contract marrying her already.
Right.
It's the same status of a fruit, potential. There's no fruit on the tree yet.
Right, so that's the question. The question is how.
It's davar shel olam. It's not in this world, which you see here.
Right, but at the same time, the question is, does it have any status at all? Could you just... Here's the second part of the question. We can phrase it as follows. In the Mishnah's case, when does the Mishnah allow you to kill the baby? only when.
When there's a danger to the mother.
Exactly, that's the implication of the mission. It doesn't say it doesn't spell it out, but it implies it. Okay, implies it pretty strongly that that's the only case when it's permitted. And if that's correct, then the implication would be that if the mother's life is not in danger, are you simply allowed to perform an abortion of any sort for any reason that you want?
No.
Seems like the answer is no.
But it,
and the question is why?
But there has to be a difference between Davar Shaba'olam and Davar Shalom.
Correct.
It's so that's, not in this world.
That's exactly. So that,
as it comes
right,
out, then
right,
it's in this world. You know,
so that's
know
right. Right, exactly. So that's the struggle. That's the tension here between trying to, you know, take both sides here. How do we quantify, how do we precisely identify the halachic status of this fetus before... before it comes out into the world? And again, the question is here from the mission. It seems like the main case when you're allowed to kill a fetus to abort is when the mother's life is in danger. Is there the question we're going to be asking is there any other situation when you would be allowed to do an abortion other than the mother's life being in danger? If the answer is yes, then the question is why and what's that based on, and how are we defining the status of the fetus in that case? And if the answer is no, then again the question is, you know, what's the where do we draw the line? So that's the main question in the Mishnah. The Gemara and Sanhedrin. Yeah.
Immediate danger.
Second?
Immediate danger.
Yeah. So if it's danger, in this case, it's clear that the case of the Mishnah has to be immediate danger because she's having difficulty giving birth. That's pretty obvious. The question would be, I guess, can you extend it to other types of danger or more far off danger in that situation? That's not clear.
The case of the Mishnah when you can't do anything when it's a strain of anything.
Right. Right.
It's a case where if you do nothing, the baby will survive and not the mother. It's not a case where both would die.
Seems to be. It's not 100% clear, but it would seem to be. That would seem to be the implication.
But if it's a situation where both would die, then you should.
That's a different question. That's a different question. Can you, if you know two people are going to die, can you kill one in order to save the other? Right. That is.
With twins.
What'd you say?
With multiple births, they'll have that situation.
Yes.
Yeah, no. Okay, it's not the same.
Go on.
I mean, this particular case, if killing the mother won't save the baby, for instance.
Right.
So you could say that the baby... because there's another issue at stake here, which is, would one have a din rodef compared to the other?
In which case, if they're both...
No, I could understand that the baby is alive even before it came out, but before it came out, if it endangers the mother, you can... kill it because it's got a din rodef.
Right. Supposedly. And now the truth is the Mishnah doesn't say anything about rodef yet.
Okay.
The Gemara is going to bring it in just a second. But
okay. So it could be that when it's already out, that they're both echad rodef hasheni.
Could be.
And that's why you can't do it. But if the baby is anyway going to die, then maybe the din rodef was there. So in a case that, you could.
Could be. We have to look at the Gemara again.
The Mishnah is saying the fact that the Mishnah is saying, if there's a danger to the mother, you can kill the baby. You can't kill something that has. You can't kill something unless it's alive.
Right. So that's part of the implication. Meaning, I mean, the truth is the language of the Mishnah doesn't. The Mishnah doesn't say actually kill. What it says is mechatchinat havlad meyah. It says you're allowed to cut up the fetus inside the mother. So cutting up doesn't necessarily have to imply that there's some sort of life. Again, the implication may be of the whole thing. It says chayeha kogin lechayav because her life precedes the fetus's life, which implies there is some sort of life. But the language doesn't actually refer to ritzicha, doesn't actually refer to murder or to killing directly in terms of the action that you're doing. The case that you mentioned, David, is another very similar case, which we're not discussing now, but it is somewhat relevant, and that is the case of basically feticide. If you have different, you know, if you have fetuses inside the mother's womb, and basically there are four of them there, okay, and they can't all survive together, you got to kill one to save the other ones. That is a major, major discussion. Can you do that? And if so, how do you decide which one is being rodef the other ones? And that, there are articles about. We're not going to have time to get into that tonight, unfortunately. But very, very interesting. And we try to avoid those questions. I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago, we try to avoid those questions if possible to not get in situations where that takes place. If we're talking about, let's say, IVF, and you're implanting a certain number of embryos back into the woman, we try to not plant too many, not send too many in because we're afraid of that type of thing happening. And again, some of the poskim will reluctantly allow you to kill, arbitrarily choose one over the other. That's part of the problem. Reb Bleich has some articles about this also in some of his books. How do you decide which one is being rodef the other? It's not clear at all. So maybe you can't do any of them, right? If you're, the rule in general when it comes to killing, you know, Yahr Val Yavor, comes to somebody who's, you know, who's, if there's two people, and if you kill one, then the other one is saved. But if you don't do anything, they'll both die. So it's not clear at all. It seems like you probably can't in terms of the halachos of killing, and it seems like you're not allowed to kill one to save the other. It seems like you have to be passive. have to be, even if both are going to end up dying, you know, my chazas, how can you decide which one is has the moral right to live, therefore you can't do anything at all?
You're talking
and it's not exactly our topic, so I don't really want to get into it, but it is a major question.
You're talking about Baha'u'llah in this world.
Yeah. It's
but
not exactly the same
thing. It might
be a little
different.
You're right, because it's not correct. Correct, you're right, and that might make it more lenient. That might be the reason why, to begin with, we're allowed to say that maybe for the feticide case, you can arbitrarily choose one fetus over the other ones to kill, simply because of the fact that, you know, it's not a complete life at this point. I think these are difficult questions, and, you know, each one really deserves a shir unto itself, which I don't think we're not gonna have enough time unless we spend the rest of the year on these topics. But yeah, very, 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 very important and very, very relevant. Okay, again, anybody who wants more sources about any of these topics that we're mentioning in passing here and passing up, please feel free to ask me afterwards. I can direct you to the proper articles or the sources you can take a look at for more research.
I'm not sure maybe we said this right, but when we talk about a danger to the mother,
yeah,
how much of a danger does it have to be?
That's a great question.
Because today
right.
We have all kinds of things that,
right.
Pregnancy onset diabetes that,
right.
You know, years ago could have
right.
endangered her life.
Right.
Today it doesn't at all, but...
Right. I think most people would say today that anything that could have been dangerous to life, but at this point today is not. You have to figure out exactly what the case is.
Maybe not today, but I'm saying 20 years old, 50
right.
years. Whenever pregnancy onset diabetes was
right.
a more serious issue,
right.
you didn't know if the
right.
mother was going to die, but you knew
right.
it was putting
right.
in a big sock in the eye.
Right. That's a good question. Again, today I think many postmen would say that if you know it's absolutely under control. You know, then definitely many postmen say today, that even if there would have been a heter for abortion, then maybe today there can't be.
Well, I was just wondering if back then there would have been a heter.
So in those cases, that's a machlokas. There's an article, I don't have it with me, but there's an article also in the RJJ Journal. I think it's volume 1, actually, or volume 2, by Dr. Avram Steinberg, who also wrote the Encyclopedia for Jewish Medical Ethics. Tremendous Talmud Chacham, big medical person in Eretz Yisrael today. So he, I believe he quoted some opinions that wanted to say that case may not even qualify as sakana. Meaning in that case, if it's not a direct immediate danger right now, then you would not be allowed to do an abortion. The majority of posts can don't agree with that. The majority of posts can say if there's any possible danger, even if it's not immediate, but it's, you know, potential danger, that most posts would say that that's good enough to allow you to do an abortion if doing the abortion will save, you know, prevent the danger to the mother. Again, if you want the article, I can tell you. I have to find it. I think it's volume 1 or volume 2 of the RJJ. Okay, good. Let's move on here. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin, source number 3, expands on the Mishnah a little bit. The Gemara says, Yatzar Rosh Einogin Bo, right? The Mishnah said, once the baby's out, you can't touch it, because you can't push off one nefesh for another. And the Gemara asks, one second, why is that the case? Shouldn't it be a Rodef? And we know that a Rodef, halachically, is a chaser, a pursuer, meaning if you're walking down the street, and somebody shows up, you know, with, I don't know, I guess he shows up with a gun and aims at you, you know, threatens you. Or let's say there's no gun. Whatever it is, he's chasing after you. He wants to kill you. Okay, so if you were able to, let's say, you know, okay, you were in the Israeli army, whatever, you know what you're doing. Okay, I don't know what I'm doing. Let's say you knew what you were doing. Are you allowed to kill him first to make sure he doesn't kill you? Of course you are. Why? You're not allowed to kill. Yar val yavor. The answer is that when it comes to the halacha of Rodef is unique. If somebody's chasing you in order to kill you, and the only way that you can save your own life is by self-defense, then the halacha is that you're allowed to kill him in order to save your life. That's the unique halacha of Rodef. He has already put himself in a situation where he allows himself to be open to the possibility of being killed. Okay. That's part of the question. Okay, so if you look at the next line of the Gemara here, that's exactly what the Gemara wants to say. We're in the middle of source number 3 right now. Okay, and the Rashi is source number 4 is going, you know, goes with that. Mm-hmm. The Gemara asks, isn't he a Rodef? Meaning, in the case of the baby there, So you know, he's the baby is endangering the life of the mother. Why can't we kill the baby even after the baby's alive? And the answer is,
specify,
yeah,
Rodef, anyone can do the Rodef, not just the Nirda.
Yeah. Correct. That's the Gemara in the Sanhedrin. The Gemara, that same Gemara there, somewhere on the fine Beis Nine Aleph, discusses that question. But it seems that his opening, and the Rishon Nechum discussed this. They analyze, they break down this question exactly what the status of a Rodef is. But it seems that basically the Rodef, you can't bring him to Beis Din to kill like in a court. That in Beis Din of 23, you wouldn't bring him and say he's Chayav Misa and give him warning and, you know, throw him off the cliff as stoning. But apparently any time that he's in the middle of that action of chasing you, he's allowed to be killed. Okay? That's what he's done for himself. So the Gemara's answer is that the baby, even after it's alive, is not a Rodef, because to Mishani Hasam Dim is Shamaya Karadfila, that they're chasing her from Shamai, meaning it's Ki'ilu, it's as if it's a heavenly pursuer here, because the baby has no mind of its own at this point. The baby is 1 day old, half a day old, 1 hour old, and it's obviously, in this case, and this is, again, this is discussed in the Rishonim and the Achronim, it seems from the simple reading of the Gemara that we're, you know, what it's saying is that because there's no intent to be a rodef, so that would not allow him to have the status of the rodef, which, by the way, is not so simple, and many poskim don't hold that way. Many poskim hold that even if you don't have intent to be a rodef, if you are a rodef, somebody can kill you. Okay. Again, we don't have time to get into that now. But in this specific case, apparently, what they want to say is because the baby is, you know, 3 months old, or not even three. I'm sorry, three days old, 1 day old, 1 hour old. The baby is so young that the only way to view this whole situation is that in Shemayim, heaven is basically chasing after her. And since in this case it's Mishamayim, therefore that obviates the status of Rodef. The baby is not have the status of Rodef, and therefore you would not be allowed to kill the baby in this situation. So essentially what we've done, what the Gemara has done here, is basically said that in the case where the baby has come out, the baby can't be killed because the baby is alive, the baby is clear nefesh, the baby is not a rodef because it's mishamayim. In the case where the baby has not come out yet, it seems like the Mishnah, according to the Gemara, will be saying, yeah, the baby's not come out yet, and you're allowed to kill the baby. Why? Presumably simply because of the fact that it's not, you know, that it's not quite as much of a nefesh yet. It's, you know, her life precedes the fetus's life because the fetus doesn't have a total life yet before the baby is born. That's basically the implication of the Gemara at this point. Now, the question is, what do you derive from this? And again, it's not exactly clear where we go from here. And we still have the question we had before: if there's no danger to the mother, would it be permitted to abort the fetus? That's still an open question. We haven't totally answered that question yet. There are other discussions also that we have. We're not going to skip the source for now, just so you're aware. There is an interesting Gemara, Mishnah Gemara in Erech and Daf Zayin, which I think I put on the source sheet here. So it has to do with the question where the woman, there's a pregnant woman, and she violated, you know, she did some sort of Avera, where she's Chayav Misa. And you put her to death, can you kill the baby, all the fetus also together with her? And the answer seems to be yes, that you do. But then there are questions, maybe you have to wait. And there's a whole discussion there also. And part of the question there also is the baby considered to be Chayav Misa together with the mother, because the baby is considered to be a part of the mother? Is that a question? And then in that Mishnah there, they also say that if she's already about to give birth, then maybe we wait until after she gives birth in order to kill her. And again, the question there also is, what's the status of the fetus in that situation? And we're not going to go into the details there now, just because we don't have time. But
we're talking about not only physical things. Not everybody's a din. If somebody is raped by Nebuchadnezzar and Hitler and Shem,
right,
and they just can't, it's emotionally destroying them.
Oh. So that's a very, very important question, and probably towards the end, hopefully, we'll spend a minute or two to talk about that case. The answer is going to have to depend on how serious the prohibition of abortion is. Meaning, if it's Nisra Doraisa of Ritzicha, and Yavar Val Yavar, there's nothing you can do. You can't get around it. If it's something which is maybe only Drabanan, or it's something which is Doraisa, but, you know, it's a lesser form of a Doraisa in some form, then perhaps there is room to be made, depending on how serious emotional traumas in that kind of situation. That's what the postman discussed. So let's go. We have to go a couple steps first before we get to that. Okay.
We're not getting too specific about this.
Say again.
We're not getting too specific about this, but there's a couple different levels of the shama you might say.
Okay.
Does that have anything to do with the difference between a nefesh and a shama, ruach, and for that reason you can make distinctions between?
That's a very interesting question. In the classic halachic sources, the answer is no. But once you accept, if you take the Hasidic sources and you accept them, then it could be you can make some sort of similar distinction in the situation. But the question is, what stage along the way do all those things happen? Meaning, there's a discussion in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, I think, about when a person gets a neshama. I think it's a machlokus between, I think, one of the Tanaim, Rebbe maybe, and one of the Roman people. You have to look it up. I think it's Dafsari or Dafsari Aleph or whatever. But the debate between them was, does the neshama come at the beginning of conception, or does it come at birth? I think, if I remember correctly, I think the conclusion is maybe that it actually only comes at birth. Which, again, that's the neshama, not the nefesh, but apparently they might go together. There certainly has to be some element of life at that point, but I'm not sure if it matches up directly to the Hasidic concepts, because I think the Hasidic world, they were dealing on a different level. They were on a different wavelength than what we're talking about here. But again, the idea that there could be different levels is absolutely relevant. That's for sure true, even if you would say that the actual different levels don't necessarily match up. But the concept is definitely something, you know, which you can talk about, and definitely could make sense here. Okay, now what's interesting is that the Rambam, when he quotes the Gemara, the Rambam seems to add in a little monkey wrench here to the Gemara. And again, this Rambam has been the source of pages and pages and pages of discussion, which again, we don't have time to get into now, but just so you see what the question is, and you know, we'll see one or two opinions of how that got transferred to Halacha L'maisa here. The Rambam basically says, this is in Hilchos Rotzeach Perak Aleph, the Rambam says that there's a concept of Rodef, and then he says, and he's discussing examples of Rodef, when do they apply, and he brings an Ar Gemara here in Sanhedrin as an example of Rodef. He says, therefore, the Chachamim, this is in source number 8 right now, that we're looking at. So he says that the Chacham have instructed that a woman who's having trouble giving birth, who's in danger, she's allowed to cut up her baby, a fetus, in her body. Why? Because the baby, the fetus, is a rodent. And this is in the case when the baby has not yet left the mother's womb. Wow. And when the baby comes out, the Rambam says, when the head has come out, then halacha is you can't touch the baby, because ein docha nefesh bin nefesh. And then he added, mizehu tivo shalom. And this is the nature of the world, meaning this is normal. Okay? And apparently in that case, that's not considered to be, this is his version of interpretation of Mishmaim Karatila, that what he understands is that when the baby is born, that automatically could create a danger to the mother. That's natural. Something which is natural cannot be halachically considered to be a rodev. Okay, that's basically how the Rambam understands the Gemara. But what's interesting for us is that the Rambam also inserted the concept of rodev into the first case in the Mishnah. And he says even in the case where the baby is still inside the mother, there also, the reason why you're allowed to kill the baby in that situation, he doesn't mention anything about it being a lesser level of life. Rather, he says because the baby is kirodev, like the baby is like a rodev after to kill her. So why is the Rambam bringing in rodev here when the Mishnah didn't directly bring in rodev? That's the major, one of the major, major questions on the Rambam, and what implications does that have for the question of abortion and the status of the life of the fetus? So without getting too complicated here, there are a lot of answers. Again, there's so many achronim and rishonim also that discuss this question in the Rambam and try to give different pshatim in the Rambam. Just to give you two major directions for answers in the contemporary post and to try to explain the Rambam without answering every single point, but just the direction that they're going. And both of these have major, major halacha l'maaseh implications when it comes to the conclusion of abortion, which we'll get to again, in another couple of minutes. The two are basically the Moshe and Rav Waldenberg. Okay, these are the two, I guess we call two of the extremes in terms of understanding the Rambam. And this fits with their general mahalach in general for abortion, which we'll see as we go along. Basically, Rav Moshe and Igros Moshe basically says, and again, I'm not going to read it inside, but I quoted you part of it here. If you want to look it up. It's in source 13. Again, there's the chew is much longer, and I just quoted a couple lines here. I'm not even sure if I got the right couple lines to explain the point I wanted to say, but I did this very quickly today. Basically, Rav Moshe wants to say the following. He wants to say that really, when you kill a fetus, even when the fetus is inside the mother, that's still considered to be ritzicha. That's still murder. Okay. The reason the Rambam brings in rodef is because he holds that really the fetus is alive. Okay, the fetus has a strong level of life of chiyus. Okay. Since the fetus is alive, therefore the real reason why the halacha is you're allowed to kill the fetus, in order to save the mother when the fetus is still inside the mother, is only because of the reason of rodef, is only because the fetus is chasing after you. Okay? Now apparently again in this case, he doesn't hold of the idea of Mishamaya Karafila, and the Ramosha explains the whole thing inside, we're not going to go into all the details here. But he feels that this is really a real case of rodef. At the same time, it's not a complete nefesh, meaning it's not a complete nefesh. It's, if it would have been a complete nefesh, it would be forbidden to kill the baby the same way that it's forbidden to kill the baby when it's born. But the point of the Rav Moshe is that it's not a complete nefesh to say that that you would have to let it be, but it's enough of a nefesh to say that in theory would be subject to ritzicha, meaning it would be included in the prohibition of murder, right? Except for the fact that it's a rodef. Okay, that's how Moshe understands it. Okay, meaning the only reason why it would be permitted to kill this baby is because of the fact that the baby is a rodef. If not for that, it would be enough of a nefesh, even if it's not a complete nefesh, it would be enough of a life that halacha would treat it exactly the same thing as if you killed a regular person. That's Rav Moshe's interpretation of the Rambam, and based on that, Rav Moshe goes along and takes a very, very stringent stand concerning abortion in general, which we'll come back to in a couple of minutes, that basically it's almost always usher. Okay, that's Rav Moshe, but part of Rav Moshe's basis for that is the Rambam, is his interpretation of the Rambam. Again, he quotes other Rishonim also, the Tosfos we'll see in a second, but that's his interpretation of the Rambam. Rav Waldenberg in the Tzitz Eliezer, and this is in source, again, I'm not going to read it inside, but it's in source number 9. Basically, this is one section. Again, the Tzitz Eliezer is Marach. He talks about it at length. But I just quoted you two paragraphs here in source number 9. It's in Chilak Tes Siman Nun Aleph in Parag Gimel. And that's where he talks about this question of abortion. Again, it's very, very, quite lengthy. Rav Waldenberg basically takes an opposite approach on the Rambam. And he wants to say that really, according to the Rambam, the fetus is not considered to be a real life. Okay, it's not considered to be a nefesh. So why then does the Rambam use the word rodef? Why doesn't the Rambam simply say that in the case where the fetus is inside the mother, that it's permitted to kill the fetus because it's not a life? Why doesn't the Rambam say that? Why does the Rambam say that it's only permitted to kill the fetus because it's a rodef? He says, well, it's kirodef, okay? He's like a rodef, meaning that the following, he's not really alive, okay? He's not really alive, But he's alive enough that if not for the problem of Rodef, that wouldn't have been, it wouldn't have been enough of a reason to kill him. Okay? But at the same time, he's not really alive. So again, Waldner is a lower level, the same idea as Rav Moshe, but a much, much lower level. So at the end of the day, using that concept, again, we're not going into all the details here of how he works the whole thing out. But basically what Waldner ends up saying is the following. He ends up saying that there's the combination of the fact that the fetus is not really alive, number one. It's not completely alive, number one. And number two, that that the idea is that it's he's kirodif, that the fetus is like a rodif, okay? He's not a real life. He's like a rodif, like a real life, but he's not really a real life. So that basically is enough. That's enough of a reason, according to him, for why we're allowed to kill the fetus when the fetus is inside the mother. Okay, the fetus is not really a real life, but just the fact that the fetus was not, you know, a real life by itself wouldn't have been sufficient reason to kill the fetus. The fact that the fetus is endangering the mother's life is the second part. You need to have both, according to Waldenberg. A, the fetus has to be endangering the mother's life, and B, you have to have that the fetus is not really enough of a life in order to be makil. That's what he wants to say here. That's his pshat on the Rambam. Now, at the end of the day, Rav Waldenberg is going to be even more makil than that. Halacha l'maisa, when it comes to some real life situations, he's actually going to be even more lenient and say that even if you only have one of those two things, even if you only have the fact that the fetus is not really alive, and you have other serious emotional or other problems, even if it's not that the mother's life is in danger, it may still be permitted, according to him, to abort. And we'll get back to that in a couple of minutes. But that is his pshat in the Rambam. Again, his pshat in the Rambam leads into a slightly more lenient interpretation of the Rambam than Rav Moshe, which again sort of sets at least part of the basis for him being more lenient at the end of the day for questions of abortion. That's the story in the Rambam. Now, very quickly, we don't have time to go into this now, but Tosfos also has some very, very interesting comments here. There seems to be a contradiction in different comments of Tosfos in the different Gemaras. Not going to go into it, but basically this Tosfos is found in sources 6 and 7, Tosfos in Masechet Nida Daf Mem Dalad, and Tosfos in Sanhedrin Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph. And it seems to say maybe conflicting things. In one Tosfos, he almost seems to imply that maybe it's even permitted to abort a fetus. He basically says it's permitted. And Rishon discussed that he really meant that it's permitted. Maybe he just meant that it's usher, it's not usher d'oraisa, it's usher only d'rabbanan, meaning it's potter, not usher. Not clear. There's a big, big discussion there what Tosfos meant by that in source number 6. Again, it's in the middle of a context, in the middle of discussion, which we're not going to get into, but he basically says it's mutar. The language that he uses is, in one situation, is mutar lahorgo, it's permitted to kill him. So that's, they discuss that. On the other hand, Tosfos also says that basically for a Jew, that a non-Jew, by the way, Ben Noach, is never allowed to kill a anybody. A non-Jew is never allowed to kill even a fetus. And Tosfos wants to say in source number 7, Tosfos in Sanhedrin wants to say that a Jew also is included in any halacha that a non-Jew is included, and therefore certainly a Jew is not allowed to kill a fetus either, which basically is saying that abortion is definitely usher. And in the context, he seems to be saying that it's usher d'oraisa. Seems to be saying that it's usher d'oraisa. So you have an extreme here. On one hand, Tosfos might say that it's completely permitted. On the other hand, he may say that it's usher d'oraisa, very, very wide extreme. And the question is, again, you know, what do you do with these things? And it's very, very unclear. And even if it's usher d'oraisa, what's the basis for it? Again, we said before, according to Moshe, maybe it's actually an isser or tzicha, but according to most opinions, it doesn't seem to be clear that we're talking about a prohibition of murder. So then what's it based on? If it's not a prohibition of murder, what would be the potential Torah prohibition of killing a fetus? So basically we're sort of stuck here. That's essentially what the Achronim are struggling with, trying to figure out what to do with some of these situations.
I said that for Tosfos is because if it's asof for Ben Noach, it's asof for us.
Oh, but asof for, based on what?
For Ben Noach?
Yeah.
Adam by Adam.
Oh, so is that Ritzicha? Maybe it is, maybe not.
No, it's not Ritzicha. Oh, it's Esor. It's like
that's the question.
Fire or whatever.
Right. So that's the question. Question is, would you say, according to Tosfos, that is considered to be exactly the same prohibition as a non-Jew? Would you say no? It means that the level of the prohibition is the same as the non-Jew, but the basis for the prohibition, what it's based on, might be a whole different board. It might be a whole different yesod, according to Tosfos, of what it's based on. And that's what the Achron, which we'll get to right now, give you know, other kinds of suggestions of what it might be. So basically, we have a number of opinions in the Achronim concerning how to deal with this bottom one. So the Chavos Yair, again, these are all long shuvim, and we're not going through them now, but just take a couple lines out. The Chavos Yair, I believe, is on the source sheet here. I don't know which source it is. Did I get it on here? Yeah, source 10. So in his discussion, in the middle of his discussion, he suggests that seems to say, and this is also a discussion, he seems to say that it's based on Hotzah Zera Levatala. Okay? That by itself, as we discussed previously, is also a machlokas, whether Hotzah Zera Levatala is Doraisa or Darabanan. But he wants to say, whatever level Hotzah Zera Levatala is, which may be Doraisa, if it's forbidden to waste seed, then certainly Kol Shekein has to be forbidden also to abort. Okay? You already have a real child, right? You have a real fetus. To kill that has to be 10 times worse than Hotzah Zera Levatala, which is only a potential for creating a child. And the assumption here, of course, is that Hotzah Zera Levatala is linked directly to the concept of having a child. That's the assumption that he's making, which again, many poskim do make. That's very, very clear in the Rishonim, that assumption is, you know, is borne out by many. Yeah.
I don't find it clear at all.
Okay, so we don't have time to get into now, but many Rishonim assume that the reason why Hotzah Zera Levatala is so severe is because you're cutting off the potential for creating life. Now again, you're right, it doesn't follow through in all situations of Hotzah Zera Levatala, and therefore they have to add additional definitions to explain what is Levatala. Maybe Levatala just simply means it's not natural. But the main reason, where the starting point seems to be that you're cutting off in many cases the potential for an actual life there.
So, what's the source
for
being used for the
Raisa? We're not going to get into that now. It's unclear exactly what the source would be, and maybe, I don't remember if they bring down Psukim. I don't know if they have specific Psukim for it. They just say that it's, I think they say that maybe it's some sort of prohibition of Ritzicha, maybe, but not exactly the same kind of Ritzicha. It's like a lower level of Ritzicha. So look again, it's technically the Talmud has a nice article about it. Unfortunately, I don't remember offhand exactly where else they say that it comes from. But maybe it was from Ritzicha. I don't remember anymore. Sorry. Let's check again. Okay, so that's the Chalas Yor. We're running short on time, so let's go quickly through some of the other ones here. Ben Sion Uziel, the Mishpatei Uziel, he wants to say that the problem is that you're mevatel puruvu. Okay, meaning if there's a mitzvah puruvu, so fine. There's one mitzvah to have a child, and if you don't have children, then you're mevatel mitzvah puruvu. Here, you're actively violating the mitzvah puruvu. It's like one step past just not having children. This is taking a potential child and getting rid of it, cutting it off. So he says this is a serious problem of bitul puruvu, which is a problem. That's his understanding of what the basis for the potential for abortion being usher is.
So then there
could
be cases where it's
mutter. Could be.
Yeah. Two boys, two girls, whatever.
No, because a case where the woman was raped by a non-Jew.
Right. Oh, good. Excellent. So good. Very good. That's a question. There are many poskim that want to say that in those kind of situations, it could be that there's room to be makil. They don't only bring in this idea, though, of puruvu, they also bring in the concept of the emotional stress and the trauma, which it certainly, if you hold that it's only Drabbanan, would definitely mean there's room to take into account these kinds of things. Another opinion that some of the Achronim say,
with the IVF, that through that way, also is not necessarily puruvu.
Right.
So therefore, you would be if you needed to abort it.
Right.
According to this,
if it's an issue of mevatel puruvu,
right.
Okay, could be though. Then again, he might say that even if it's not technically puruvu, we might say the fact that there's a concept of having children, and in this case, you have a child, a potential child, and you're getting rid of it, you're cutting it off. It could be he might still say it's a problem. I'm not sure. I think Raziel was against artificial insemination in the first place. I think he was actually one of the postmen that was against it, if I remember correctly.
Just being mevatel puruvu doesn't seem like such a strong prohibition, because if that's
right.
The case.
Right.
And you have a family who reaches that conclusion, for example, that they can't afford it.
Right.
Would that be a valid reason for?
Good question.
If it were only a problem of bitul mitzvah asei.
Right. Okay. Good question. But again, he might say again. Unfortunately, I don't have the tshuva in front of me. I didn't put it on the source sheet. I have to look inside again. But it could be he would say that when you're actually actively doing it, it's not just a question of bitul puruvu, a bitul mitzvah asei, which is usually. In most cases, it's just doing nothing. In this case, when you're actually cutting it off, it's, you know, there's a Gemara in Makos about, you know, bitov lo bitov and kim lo kim. It could be that this is, I don't know, for some reason, you know, he thinks this is worse because you're actively, you know, cutting off the potential for having the child in the first place. Let's look it up again. Okay, it could be right. And we'll see here that some of these posts can do indeed say that in some cases where it could be a little more lenient. Let's just finish up here quickly. Other posts say there's a problem of chaval, it's injury. I mean, it's not a question of murder, but it's a question of injury to the body if you abort a child. there are a number of the poskim that want to say that some of the possible reasons for leniency is because they hold that it's only us with the rabbanim. They may conclude, like the opinions in the poskim and the other rishonim, that maybe the prohibition of abortion is only mid rabbanim, and therefore, Rav Waldenberg, if you want to look at his major tshuva here that we mentioned before, it's in the, he mentions it again in source number 12. Basically, and this is a terrible case here, he talks about one of the Tasek's cases, I think, here, and other similar cases. Basically, he says, without getting all the details, that even up to the point, he wants to say, even for a major, major, major consideration like that, a serious, serious illness where the kid is probably going to die, in those kind of cases, even up till 6 months might be permitted to do an abortion. His major basis for that is the fact that it's only us or Drabbanan, that's what he holds. And it could be even lesser types of situations for even up to 3 months. Could be where Waldenberg seems to say that might be permitted even till 3 months if it's something which, again, is a serious type of, not quite as serious as Tay-Sachs, but something else serious where there's a major, major amount of embarrassment or something else, which again, which could include the case of rape or other kinds of similar situations, which might be permitted according to him to get an abortion up till 3 months.
He says because this is an interesting issue. People gave birth and said, I mean, women gave birth after 7 months.
Sometimes. Yeah,
you see that coming up a lot.
So that's it's either 7 months or 9 months. Today we don't have that so much.
So that's the reason. He says up to 6 months.
Rav Avadia also holds in Yabia Omer that it's only Mizra Banam. And again, anybody that holds this, Drabbanan, there's going to be more room to work out possible leniencies along the way. Rav Moshe, on the other hand, is one of the ones who feels very strongly that it's an Asur Isser Daraisa of Ritzicha. We saw the Shuvah before, and he repeats himself again a little later in the Shuvah. If you look at source number 13 and 14, source 14 also, he continues to discuss it there. Basically, he holds it's a real Isser Daraisa, it's Ritzicha, that's the end of the story, there's nothing to talk about. Nothing to talk about, only Pikuach Nefesh for the mother. When the mother's in danger, that's the only case where it might be permitted, according to Moshe, but in no other situation will it ever be permitted.
Isn't Rav Moshe, as opposed to Lecha, usually to try to find the leniencies and the loopholes?
Not necessarily, no.
Like initially, if a couple's considered married or not, Rav Hankin said they were, and
right.
they lived together.
Talking about civil marriage.
Because Rav Moshe wanted to avoid the problem, Zerim. I always thought the approach Rav Moshe was trying to avoid the problems, was trying to find
Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe is a straight shooter. He will learn this again, whatever he feels is the correct conclusion. Often will be leniencies, and obviously certain cases he tells you that he is looking for leniencies, but I don't think Rav Moshe doesn't seem to be the type that would give you a leniency if he didn't strongly believe that it was 100% backed up by the sources. Okay,
so this isn't unusual that he's being
not at all. No. He feels it's very clear that this is an Isser D'oraisa of Ritzicha, and there's nothing to talk about. Okay, he quotes Rav Waldenberg in his tshuva, and basically says, he doesn't say him by name, he says, I think he made a big, big mistake here, and you can't follow him. Okay, he says, this is ridiculous what he says, basically. The whole thing is really messed up. But again, we'll get to the conclusion in just a second. But that's basically, again, these are just a range of the different sources you see,
So he says it's worse for a Jew in the source 14.
Second?
He says it's worse for a Jew than for a God.
For Rav Moshe.
Yeah.
Yes, at the end of the day, Rav Moshe seems to hold that this really is a problem of Ritzicha. If it's really a problem of Ritzicha, so then in Echanami, it is going to be a problem for a major problem for a Jew. And therefore, I think he says, he quotes another Tshuva, the Maharita, another Tshuva, which we didn't even have a chance to get into. That's basically, Okay. Okay, good. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm skipping around here. We're going a little bit quickly, just we want to finish up. Last, before we just wrap up with some conclusions, again, there's so many different cases you could talk about, which we're not going to have time to get into now. There's also another major debate in the poskim. Is there any more leniency before 40 days? Okay, we know there's a Gemara that says that before 40 days, the fetus is considered to be maya bi'alma, considered to be just, kilu water. And the question is, does that mean that before that point, there's no problem of killing the fetus because it's halachically considered to be nothing? So this is a major, major discussion among the poskim. There were some poskim that were lenient. The Sri Deishra of Weinberg, the Chavos Yair also, poskim that you can be more lenient, and in those cases there may be more room to cause an abortion. Some poskim felt that even if it's not Doraisa, even if it's Doraisa, normally before 40 days it may not be Doraisa, which again means that if there's very serious situations, there may be more room to be lenient. Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski seems to poskim that way. In Chilo Gimel, he seems to hold that. Other poskim other poskim and Sar Rav Avadia, apparently his tshuva, says that you could be even more lenient, even up till 3 months. He has other sources about hukar ha'ubar, that perhaps even up till 3 months, it's not considered to be a complete halachic life of any sort, and therefore maybe even at that point, up to that point, in certain very specific situations, you could be lenient. Rav Moshe and other poskim, Rav Unterman, also held this way very, very strongly, absolutely not. Okay, before 40 days is exactly the same thing. It's ratzicha, no room for leniency whatsoever. So again, this is a major, major machlokas before 40 days. And the extension of that machlokas, which we don't have time to get into now, is the question of what about feticide? If it's, you know, they're still in the mother's, even before they've been implanted, let's say IVF, okay? If they, before they've planted the embryo's back in the mother's womb, can you kill them? In, you know, before 40 days, in the first 3 days or 5 days, is that anything at all before the embryo has been, the fetus has been implanted in the uterus? Is that even more lenient than this? And that's also a major, major machlokas. Some poskim say it's exactly the same thing as 40 days, and therefore there's room to be lenient. Other people say maybe not. You know, maybe you have to be, maybe you have to be machmer, just like Rav Moshe. And other people say, even if you would be machmer for 40 days, maybe if it hasn't been implanted yet, or it's still in the first 2 days before it's been implanted, you know, whatever it is, maybe you could still be more lenient. So at the end of the day, there's a lot of different opinions here. There's a big, big machlokas on a lot of these points. And I guess the main point is that, again, every situation is a little bit different. It's hard to give absolute rules. But I'll just mention just two or three stories that I heard that I have in my that I heard. Some of these came from Rabbanim and Machon Pua when we studied about this. Just one story that they had there is that there was somebody who learned with Rav Moshe. Okay, they actually had a chavrusa or some sort of, you know, they were a student of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and unfortunately his first child died from Tay-Sex. So for the second child, you know, they asked him. You know, they found, I guess they found out already that he was pregnant, and the second child may have Tay-Sex. They basically told him, don't ask Rav Moshe, because you know Rav Moshe is going to tell you can't abort. Instead, come to Israel and ask one of the rabbis in Israel that's known to be more lenient about it, perhaps Rav Waldenberg or somebody else. So that's what he did. He came to Eretz Israel. He asked the Rav here, maybe to the Eliezer, maybe somebody else. He was mocked at the abortion. They did the abortion, and he said today they already, Baruch Hashem, had a few children, and basically the couple said that you can't imagine how much life it gave to them to be able to do the abortion in that situation. Meaning the stress and the trauma that, you know, causes someone to go through a whole pregnancy not knowing whether the child is going to live or die. You know, again, this is before Doria Sharma and all the genetic testing, but the illustration of the point is clearly is still very, very relevant. You know, it makes a big, major, major difference. And this is something you have to consider today when you're trying to take into account the views of all these poskim, is that you have, you know, real people that have serious, serious, you know, emotional problems. And, you know, it's very, very difficult in any of these cases. You know, you have to weigh that factor when you're talking about, you know, whether there's room to be makel or not. Naturally, what Waldenberg says, by the way, in his tshuva, where he's more making, he basically says, one of the main reasons why I'm allowing this is because of the fact that the stress for the woman is just too much to take. She can't handle it, you know, going through this whole pregnancy and then to know that your child is going to die 2 years later, 6 years later, whatever it is, you know, is just too much. And he says, you can't allow that to happen. It just can't be. So, yeah.
That's the other issue, which is allowing them to become pregnant. Telling them, maybe saying, if you know that you can't take it and that you want an abortion,
right,
and you already have two children,
right,
maybe some people would say it's better not.
What case are we talking about here? Tay-Sex. What's the scenario?
Tay-Sex.
Tay-Sex, meaning carriers. Don't mean carriers for Tay-Sex.
Yes.
Okay. There could be other diseases also. Tay-Sex, perhaps from today, is not very common anymore. But other kinds of genetic diseases, which are perhaps more common.
So for Tay-Sex, I know of a friend where they have said, don't have any more children.
Right.
And they found a different love.
Exactly the point. Now, we should keep in mind here that one of the other possible directions today is that there are opportunities today for such people to do IVF and to do genetic screening, PGD, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, where they can actually screen out. I don't remember if we discussed this last time. You can screen out which babies are the embryos are the ones that actually have the genetic problems, and you can take the other ones. So if you're on the side of people posting that permit IVF to be done in these kinds of situations, that's a very, very fantastic solution for some of these kinds of cases where originally Doria Sharm or somebody else would say you can't get married or you can't have more children, and yet today it could be. Again, you have to ask Rav, every case is different, but many Rabbanim will permit you in these kinds of situations, and I know cases where this has been done, and I know Rabbanim that have allowed it, some of my Rabbanim have allowed the Matar IVF and doing genetic screening in those cases to be able to avoid the problem. So that's another option to take into account today when you're talking about some of the genetic questions.
What's better?
Meaning?
Between doing IVF or doing it naturally, but now you have a 25% chance of aborting.
Right, so that's a great question. My impression would be that more poskim would prefer IVF to come first. and this is just my impression. My impression would be that at the end of the day, you know, the major issues of IVF are hotzah, dar levatala, and that again, yes, it's very, very serious, but it's not viewed quite as seriously as this question of abortion. They're both very serious. They're both very, very serious. If you haven't gotten that by now in the last couple of weeks, but at the end of the day, you know, if that would be the choice, assuming that you would tell them that they should have children and not they should do nothing, right? It would seem to me that the IVF is the better way to go than to do abortion. However, there are some cases where some poskim will say that, you know, let's say this is another very serious question which we don't have time to get into now. You know, women that are, and this is very relevant for, you know, people that we know, or even some of us, you know, women get to be a certain age and it's already, you know, somewhat dangerous to have a child. You know, some rabbanim will encourage women, even if they're getting older, that they should still try to have children, because even though there's a 1% chance or 0.5% chance that they might have a problem with a child or Down syndrome, whatever it is, when they're older, at the same time, are you preventing, cutting off the possibility of the other 99.5% of the children that could be born that would be totally healthy? Why are you giving into that? You know, you should still try to have more children anyway if you're willing. And there are some rabbanim, I can't mention names because they wouldn't say this, but there are some rabbanim that will tell you that if you do that, that at the end of the day, if there ends up being a problem during the first couple months that you know already there's a genetic defect in the fetus, that they might, if you go back to them, they might be willing to tell you in specific situations that maybe there's room to have an abortion. Meaning, as a reward for your being willing to have a child at that age, you know, and undergo the risks, it could be that they'll tell you that in certain cases there might be room to abort. And again, some rabbanim are, you know, will poskim that for Down syndrome might be room to abort. Many other poskim will not. But what's interesting here, and this is the other point I want to mention, so the other stories I heard here from other rabbanim in Machon Pua, that one couple went to Shlomo Zalman Orbach and they asked him to give Matzer an abortion. And he basically said, well, why are you coming to me? There are plenty of other good rabbanim around. I want to ask you, Shlomo Zalman, you know, but he insisted, you know, you have to find another rabbanim, don't come to me. A lot of the poskim here understand, they're very sensitive, and they realize that even if they themselves feel that abortion is a terrible issue and you can't do it, but because of the sensitivity, because of the emotional stress and all the other problems, they realize that maybe it's worthwhile for them to send the people asking to some other rav that will be matzarit. And therefore, what's basically ended up happening, halacha l'maisa here, is that in general, most poskim are very, very machmir when it comes to abortion. Most poskim will not allow most of these abortions. However, in certain situations, there will be room to be makel. Perhaps, again, in cases of rape, other kinds of cases where, you know, a Down syndrome child or some other defects will basically ruin the family, cause the parents to get divorced, etc., etc., etc. Any of these kinds of cases, you know, they will try, you know, they will look for kulas, especially if it's for before 40 days. You know, they'll be even more willing to look for leniencies. But a lot of the time, what they'll do is send you to the rav that they already know will be matzah for you. They won't tell you themselves. They'll say, go to, you know, the rav who holds like the Tzitz Eliezer. Okay, he's not alive anymore today. There are other rabbanim that will hold that. And, you know, there's one rav in Brooklyn also that's reported to be very, very lenient about these kinds of things. Go to him. Go talk to him, and he'll be matzah your abortion for you, even if I would never be able to do it myself. And that's, again, even though it seems a little strange, and that gets into the question of, you know, choosing a rav and halacha and hashkafa and some of the questions we've mentioned before. But at the end of the day, it shows you that rabbanim often recognize that even if they're not willing to make a psak in a certain situation because they don't feel that it's correct, they're sensitive enough to send somebody in some of these situations to a different rav that they feel will give them a better psak. And that's something which is, again, very, very interesting, which we can talk about, but very, very important in these kind of situations. And when you're dealing with real people in real cases where it's very, very difficult a lot of the time, and there are often needs for leniency, and you have to do your best to try to find ways to be lenient while at the same time, you know, acknowledging the fact that when we're talking about abortion, there's a very, very serious question, very, very serious prohibition going on here, regardless of what the source is. That's basically how things come off. Again, at the end of the day, you know, every case is very, very different, but, you know, all the other side factors are very important as well. What kind of consequences will doing the abortion or not doing the abortion have? At the same time, be aware that many women that do an abortion, unfortunately, are traumatized afterwards, and they regret it, and they have, you know, nightmares about it. It's a very, very serious thing that sometimes they can't overcome it afterwards, after they've done it, to feel, I can't believe that I did that. And again, you know, just because you have a child with disabilities does not necessarily mean it's the end of the world. So, you know, again, it's difficult, and I'm not saying that it's easy. But at the end of the day, somebody that, let's say, a Down syndrome child or somebody like that, you know, when they come to think about it afterwards, you know, they might never forgive themselves for it. And plenty of people that have Down syndrome or other children like that, say that it was the biggest bracha that happened to their family. Now, yes, it's not easy. It's very, very difficult. A lot of resources. It taxes the family tremendously. At the end of the day, they say that, you know, such a child can give someone, bring them so much simcha. that again, when it comes to, I'm not debating whether it's good or bad, but when it comes down to deciding whether it's appropriate to give an abortion or not, you got to take all these factors into account, even though you can't necessarily, you don't know exactly what's going to come up in the future. You have to try to do your best to be Ezu HaChacham HaRoes HaNolad, you know, who's the person who's wise, the person who can see the future before it happens, to be able to anticipate some of these, you know, all these different kinds of things before they happen. Okay, any questions? Okay, again, there's so many different kinds of cases that can come up here. Unfortunately, we just mentioned a smattering of a very small amount of different possibilities, but we should be zocha that these kind of questions should never, we shouldn't have to worry about the negative sides of all the questions having to do with abortion and other types of problems. Okay.